Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome inside to another edition of the Nat Todd Stove Show right here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Coming up today, we talk, of course, all the happenings around Major League Baseball. Hey, one of the bigger personnel dominoes of this offseason finally fell this week with JT Realmuto going to the Philadelphia Phillies. Also talk about the death of Frank Robinson, one of baseball's greats, perhaps underappreciated amongst the game's superstars of all time. We'll hear Brian Kenny and MLB's tribute to him, as well as Grant and Danny, a conversation with obviously one of the greatest baseball scribes of our time, Tom Boswell, from the Washington Post, from their show yesterday, talking about the great career of Frank Robinson. Are we any closer, though, as we talk to you on this Saturday, are we any closer to Bryce Harper, Manny Machado making decisions? And you know, now we've actually started to see more of the stories this week of the players who are kind of held in hostage and held in limbo. You can't tell me there's a number of teams that don't want to talk to Dallas Keuchel about playing for their team. And the question is it going to be teams that want to spend money on Harper or Machado? And it's almost like we replay the same statement every week, but at least now those guys are starting to get some of the necessary due as free agents, and really not much conversation about those guys right now that have not signed contracts, and pitchers and catchers report. Now, obviously, even though they don't necessarily have a team, you know, guys are throwing. I mean, guys like Kimbrel, guys like Keuchel, they're working out, they're throwing. Guys like Marwin Gonzalez, Mike Moustakas, you know, they're working out, but not necessarily, obviously, with the team. And, you know, those guys right now are all in limbo. And I don't know if what we're seeing from Major League Baseball is owners trying to finally take back the game, save themselves from themselves, as we have seen. In the past, we've seen some owners spend out of control. And now it appears as if baseball is trying, just like the stock market, to execute a correction. And certainly poor timing for guys like Harper, Machado, perhaps. Yeah, no doubt. But, you know, at some point, there is a part of me that applauds ownership for trying to take back control of the game that they really lost control of to the agents. The agents, and most notably Scott Boras. Scott Boras made a lot of money at the expense of Major League Baseball. And his handling of his clients and getting teams basically to say, Uncle, we give. Sorry, Scott, whatever you want, we'll give it to you. And now baseball's trying to execute a correction. I think a much-needed correction. We're starting to see monopoly money there. NBA, monopoly money. I mean, just absolute monopoly money. Granted, do a lot of these franchises generate a lot of money? Yes, no question. But at the same time, you know, what's the one thing that fans often talk about? It's great to have a superstar, but you want a competitive ball club. You want a ball club that you can come to the park every night and truly believe that that ball club's got a chance to win. Some teams have had superstars through the years, individuals, but not teams because they wouldn't spend enough to round out the team. You've got some teams that certainly are willing to do that in a few markets around Major League Baseball, and then you've got some that are just happy to take all that TV revenue sharing money, all the other stuff that goes along with it, make some profit, and look at the bottom line at the end of the year. Now, the teams that are involved right now, Bryce Harper talked to the Giants this week. We talked about that on the show last week. Chris Russell, through reporting here on The Fan, confirming that this week. And when you talk about the Giants getting involved, it's a West Coast team. Makes sense. The team could certainly, you know, use a guy like Bryce Harper. They need to find a way to get up to that top line of the division with the Los Angeles Dodgers right now. You could argue that the Giants are behind the Rockies in the division. So now, look, teams around Major League Baseball are looking around going, hearing the whispers, you know, the money that's being whispered out there going, well, let's throw a package out there and see what happens. Let's talk to Scott Boras. What's the worst he can say? No. You're not doing your due diligence, in my mind, if you're a Major League team at this point, to not pick up the phone and say to Scott Boras, hey, what does it take right now to get to your top line? I applaud the Giants for getting involved here. Why not? If I'm a team, I pick up the phone. If I'm the Cebu Lions, I call up Scott Boras and say, hey, can we get him over here? What's the worst he can say? No. Because right now, those glorified offers, those astronomical figures that we had heard about in the offseason, they clearly don't exist for Machado and Harper right now. And do both players deserve to be compensated highly? Yes. Based on other players in the game, these players certainly deserve to be compensated. But right now, they're clearly not getting the dollars that many, many people thought they would get on the open market. Former Nats reliever Tim Collins signing a contract with Minnesota. Gets a minor league deal with the invite to spring training coming up. Nats re-signed Jeremy Hellickson, who went 5-3 in 2018 with Washington. 91 and a third innings, only gave up 78 hits. So teams hitting against him last season, not terribly. And if you're the Nats, if you can keep him healthy, then you've got a guy that, you know, likely can eat up some innings at the back end of that rotation. I mean, a 3.45 ERA, you'll take that out of your number four, number five guy in the back end of that rotation. So that makes a lot of sense to me. That way you don't put that pressure on Eric Fetty. You can keep the wear and tear down on Joe Ross, who's still making his way back, obviously, from Tommy John surgery. So from that standpoint, not a bad move, I think, for the Nationals. I mean, he was pitching well when he went to cover first base, opening batter of a game in Philadelphia, and the rest of his season changed from that point on. So we'll see what Jeremy Hellickson does returning to the Washington Nationals. Again, solid move. They know the player, a lot of confidence in the player, and certainly to help the back end of that situation there. Now, to me, you know, what does it do for Eric Fetty? I think it's going to be interesting to see what role they ask him to play. I think he ends up going to AAA Fresno at the start of the year. You don't want that guy, to me, in the bullpen. He has to be pitching in a rotation. And as long as Anibal Sanchez and Jeremy Hellickson give you what you think you're going to get with the way the early part of the season gets stretched out a little bit, where you don't necessarily get that deep in your rotation, you need Eric Fetty to be pitching. And I think right now that's going to be a AAA Fresno as this season gets underway. Would you keep Ross, or do you do the same thing with him? I don't know. He's a guy I think you want on a throwing program that's constantly throwing, unless you believe he's got a future as a reliever at some point within your organization and you ask him to make that move. I think those are two guys that early in spring training, when Grant and Danny are down there, obviously the Junkies, Chad Dukes, everybody will be broadcasting from down there at some point during spring training. And when they talk to Mike Rizzo, they talk to Davey Martinez, I think those are going to be the interesting things. You know, pitching coach Derek Lilliquist, what kind of roles do they see those two guys carving out? If you believe they're starters, do they both end up at Fresno? It's quite the possibility. But also remember, you've got a lot of bad weather early in the season, and that means you're going to have pitchers that start games, go two or three innings, and maybe have to sit, and then you're going to need another long guy. And that's another potential role that a guy like Ross or a guy like Fetty could potentially have. And I think you have to budget for that on your pitching staff in the early portion of the season. Not necessarily a thing you really want to do, but I think it's something you have to do. Coming up, we'll spend some time on Frank Robinson. And why not? One of the game's greats. Obviously, an effect on this franchise here in Washington. Its inaugural manager. And in my mind, one of the most underappreciated superstars in the history of Major League Baseball. We'll hear MLB.com's tribute to him. Grant and Danny's conversation with Tom Boswell on Frank Robinson and more. Coming up on this edition of the Nats Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to the Nats Hot Stove Show. Frank Robinson was one of baseball's greatest players. At times, his talents on the field probably weren't as appreciated as much as they should have been. While Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier for players, Frank Robinson did it in an even harder area. He did it in an area of management, which is still at times a challenge these days. Frank Robinson, a player manager in Cleveland, in his first game in that role, hit a home run on opening day against the New York Yankees in those long orange pants and orange shirts of the Cleveland Indians. He, of course, would go on to manage Washington Nationals in its very first year. He also stepped in and managed the team in Montreal that Major League Baseball had to take over and run themselves before they exited Montreal. John Miller tells a great story about when an infield fly rule went wrong against the Expos, not because the umpires got it wrong, but because the players did. Catcher drops the ball, goes to tag home plate, thinking he's getting a force out at home plate. The umpires think Frank is coming to argue with them. He wasn't. He was coming to tell his team to learn the game that you're playing and a simple rule that you just fouled up, and a team got a go-ahead run against you. Brian Kenny and the folks at MLB.com with a remembrance of Frank Robinson.
Hall of Famer Frank Robinson, one of the very best to ever play the game of baseball, has passed away. Robinson was the first and only man to win the MVP in both the American and National Leagues. More significantly, he was also the first black manager in both leagues, being the skipper for Cleveland from 1975 to 1977 and San Francisco from 1981 to 1984. Robinson's 586 career home runs ranked fourth all time at the time of his retirement, trailing only Aaron, Ruth, and Mays. He won the National League MVP with the Reds in 1961, and his finest season was 1966, when he won the American League MVP and Triple Crown, leading the Orioles to the pennant. He then would help the Orioles sweep the Fall Classic that year and take home World Series MVP honors as well. Here now, Matt Viscursion with a look back at the remarkable life and career of Frank Robinson.
I'll never forget this. Somebody was standing on the field, and they were talking to an opposing player. And they were laughing. They came in off the field, and Frank said, "What are you doing?" "I'm just talking to such and such." "Don't do that anymore. Hate him. You got to hate him."
He sent his message from the batter's box, where he always crowded the plate, dared the guys to brush inside. And when they hit him, he was the kind of guy that dusted himself off and rammed the next one down the left field line for a double.
Attaboy, Frank!
Frank Robinson's life in baseball was one of recurrent greatness. His 21-year playing career produced a Rookie of the Year award, MVPs in both leagues, a Triple Crown, and a first ballot Hall of Fame election. But the story of Frank Robinson goes far beyond stats and awards, because a major part of his legacy will always be associated with becoming a major league manager.
Frank Robinson will become manager of the Cleveland Indians on Thursday. That will make him the first black man ever to manage a major league baseball team.
Frank Robinson Jr. was born on August 31, 1935 in Beaumont, Texas. His family later moved to a gang-infested area in Oakland, California. Tough territory that was also home to a future NBA immortal.
The neighborhood we lived in, he'd be tough. I always remember Frank as a really smart and tough guy.
After graduating high school in 1953, Robinson signed with the Cincinnati Reds. Following 3 years of minor league ball, Robinson got the call to the majors in 1956 at the ripe old age of 20, and he did not disappoint.
Frank Robinson bombs one over the left center field fence.
Robinson quietly became a superstar with the Reds, but he didn't stay under the radar for very long. In 1961, he netted his first MVP award and steered the Reds to their first pennant since 1940.
Frank was in the middle of that lineup, driving in runs. He was the anchor of that Reds offense there in the early 60s.
Over the next five seasons, Robinson settled into the prime of his career. And although the team averaged more than 90 wins a season, Reds owner Bill DeWitt decided to shake things up. Unexpectedly, Robinson was in the middle of his plan.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Prior to the 1966 season, Robinson was shipped out of the National League to the Baltimore Orioles. According to DeWitt, it was because Robinson was an old 30.
I was shocked, I was hurt. But after thinking about it, I said, maybe this is just what my career at this time needs, a shot in the arm, a little, another challenge.
And did he ever embrace it?
A home run for Frank Robinson.
The 66 season, Frank Robinson's first in Baltimore, would go down as his best. Robinson won the Triple Crown and was named the American League MVP in 66, making him the only player to capture that honor in both leagues. He polished off his great season by leading the Orioles to a four-game World Series sweep over the heavily favored Dodgers.
And the Orioles are the new world champion.
He put us over the top. He was that single ingredient that we needed to make us a great baseball team.
Frank Robinson has done it. The 500th home run of a brilliant Major League career.
Over his next five seasons in Baltimore, Robinson was named to four more All-Star teams, and the Orioles would go on to win three more pennants and another World Series title in 1970. After a year with the Dodgers and a stint with the Angels the following season, Robinson was traded to the Cleveland Indians. It was there that he was primed to make history.
Today we're officially stamping the appointment of Frank Robinson as the player manager of the Cleveland Indians.
Nearly 30 years after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, Frank was named player manager of the Indians, and Major League Baseball had its first African-American manager.
You know, every day Frank had to answer the same questions every day. What's it feel like?
I don't feel the pressure. I know the pressure's there because it's come from the fans, the public, and whatever. But to me, pressure comes from within, and I've never put that type of pressure on myself as a ball player, and I'm not going to start now.
When the day finally came for his debut as player manager, it was opening day 1975 against the Yankees. What came next was nothing short of remarkable. It was Robinson's first at-bat of the game, a 2-2 count against Doc Medich.
Line deep to left field. And holy cow, Frank Robinson. And what a way to break in.
A Hollywood scriptwriter wouldn't have the courage and heft. Baseball's first black manager hit a home run the first time he comes to bat. I mean, can you believe that? You can't believe that.
It was a great day for Major League Baseball.
As a player, Frank Robinson ended his career just 57 hits shy of 3,000, fourth on the all-time home run list with 586, and his number 20 was retired by both the Reds and the Orioles.
For a young boy in Oakland, California, playing on an asphalt baseball field, he didn't dare dream, not even dare think, that he would one day be standing up here, being inducted into the Hall of Fame. But it has happened. Thank you all for coming today.
Robinson remained prominent in the baseball community for the rest of his life. Commissioner Bud Selig created a position for him as Vice President for On-Field Operations, appropriately in charge of discipline. Frank Robinson was not only a baseball lifer, he was a genuine baseball renaissance man and will forever be remembered as one of the game's all-time greats.
When you look deep inside Frank Robinson's career, what stands out the most is when he came on the scene at age 20 in 1956. He led the league in runs with 122 his very first year. He hit 38 home runs. He's certainly the rookie of the year. He received MVP votes in each of his first six seasons as a major leaguer. He won the MVP in 1961, 37 home runs with 124 RBIs. He slugged .611 and his OPS was 1.015 that year. It's also remarkable to look at when he last got an MVP vote, which was 1973. He's playing for the California Angels at that time, still playing 147 games, and hit 30 home runs with 97 runs batted in. And the more you think about Frank Robinson, the more you understand who he was as a competitor. You look at 1966, and you could almost predict that great things were going to happen for Robinson, and it all worked out for the Orioles in 1966, paired with Brooks Robinson, a terrific third baseman for the Orioles, and several other terrific players that were in the Baltimore franchise at that time. It started off some terrific years for the Orioles. He scored 122 runs, hit 49 home runs, drove in 122, hit .316, slugged .637, and was obviously the MVP and an all-star. Frank Robinson's competitive nature certainly was contagious. You couldn't help but be competitive in the locker room if you played with him. And if you didn't, he was, of course, the man, the leader of that kangaroo court in Baltimore at that time. Frank Robinson in that 1973 season when he got MVP votes and hit 30 home runs was 37 years old at the time. You go back and look through the numbers through the years, he was durable. The lowest he did at full-time was 129 in 1967. But Frank Robinson was a guy that when you came to the ballpark and you talked to anybody, and obviously being a lifelong Marylander as I am, you know, you talk to several people through the years and you're a student of baseball and you listen to people through the years. Frank Robinson was one of those rare players that if you paid your money to come to the ballpark and you saw Frank Robinson that day, you got your money's worth from that ball player. And to see what Frank went on and did post-player, being a manager, and obviously a well-respected executive in Major League Baseball, he was a baseball lifer. And baseball's life was better as a result of Frank Robinson being in it. Even in his very last season as a player, 1976, 40 years old, and played in 36 games, took 79 plate appearances that year. Obviously only hit .224, still managed 3 home runs, drove in 10 runs. But at that point, Frank Robinson was doing something far greater than being a player and as a manager of a ball club and at least opening some doors to African Americans and other minorities to get involved in baseball as non-players. He helped break down another barrier. And in many ways, you can compare it what Jackie Robinson did for the players. Frank Robinson dead at the age of 83. Coming up, more on the great life of Frank Robinson and the great playing career. We'll hear from Ryan Zimmerman, his discussion with Greg Amsinger and the guys on MLB.com this week about his remembrances. Remember, he was just a 20-year-old kid who checked into the clubhouse and said, "Skip, I'm here." That skipper was Frank Robinson. We'll also hear Grant and Danny's conversation with Tom Boswell about Frank Robinson and Major League Baseball as well. More of that when the Nat's Hot Stove Show continues on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to the Nat Todd Stove Show on 106.7 The Fan. More remembrances of Frank Robinson, who passed away on Friday at the age of 83. Ryan Zimmerman was a 20-year-old kid who had just gotten done playing at the University of Virginia when he checked in late in the year at 20 years old. His first order of business, introducing himself to the legend, Frank Robinson. His reflections this week with Greg Amsinger and the guys on MLB.com about the life and times and his experiences with Frank Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, anytime things like this happen, it's tough. But it also brings out some great stories, and you hear all the accomplishments and, you know, rightfully so, that the accolades that he earned, and you realize not only what he did for baseball, but just, I mean, you could even say humanity and the way he changed the world for the time that he was here. I mean, you're talking about way more important stuff than what he did on the baseball field. So it's always sad, and you don't ever want to go through things like this, but I think it also brings out the best in people to see what people go through, and you know, even though he's gone, he's still challenging people to be a better person. So it's pretty cool to hear all the stories.
Zim, this Smoltzy, I'm always interested, you know, when a guy plays for a guy like Frank, as a position player, did you find yourself picking his brain? Did he talk baseball? What was the relationship like as a player who, you know, played in a different era and now is managing you?
Yeah, it's, well, you know, I got called up in September of 05, and I was a 20-year-old kid that played at the University of Virginia earlier that year. And I'll never forget, it was actually in Atlanta. I had to walk in to his office and introduce myself as, you know, you talk about intimidating and a tough first meeting to go in there to a living legend and basically introduce yourself and say, I'm the new kid here to play for you. But from that day on, I can honestly say that, you know, that feeling never came about again. I think from that meeting, he kind of took me in and taught me how to be a professional. He was hard to play for in some senses because he was so good at baseball. He didn't understand when I swung in a slider in the dirt or why I would, because he probably never thought he did that. But I will always appreciate how he treated me as far as, you know, being tough on me, because I think it made me the player that I am today. But, you know, using those teaching points not only to make you a better player, but I think a better person as well.
Ryan, Ken Rosenthal, Frank Robinson, obviously one of the great competitors the game has ever known. As a player, we knew that. As a manager, in what ways did you see it? Because we know he argued with umpires. We saw one day a legendary confrontation with Mike Scioscia, the opposing manager. What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, he hated losing. You know, I think I remember, I've told this story a bunch over the past few hours, but we were in Colorado one year, and this was in 06, my rookie year, and we had lost, I don't know, probably 8 or 9 games in a row. And we had some tough years. And after the game, he called us all in there, and we sat there, and he said, "We're not leaving until someone tells me what's going on." And he stared around the room, and I'm not kidding you, there was for sure more than 10 minutes of silence. And I'm sitting there, and I'm a 21-year-old kid. I know exactly what's wrong. We're playing like crap, and, you know, all this. There's zero chance I'm saying anything. We sat there for 10 minutes until finally one of the veteran guys said it, and then he just walked out of the room. He didn't even like say, "All right, well, we'll see you guys tomorrow." He just walked out of the room, and everyone looked at each other, and I think, you know, starting that next day, we played a little bit better. But that's just the kind of competitor he was. He didn't care if we maybe didn't have a roster that was as good as the other team. He just wanted you to go out and compete. And if you didn't respect the game and play the game the right way, he would do something like that. And he would teach you a lesson. And, you know, I'll always be grateful just for the way that he made people and challenged people to play the game the right way and respect the game.
And we've talked all day about how fierce he was as a competitor, but we've heard others on the network throughout the day talk about if you really got to know him, there was a warmth there and a soft side. You know, baseball season is a marathon, Ryan, you know that. At any point, did you get that warm side of Frank Robinson where he made you feel special?
Yeah, I mean, I consider myself really lucky. I think he kind of took me almost as a son. He threw me right into the fire. And you talk about coming into the big leagues as a 21-year-old, no sticks, my first year. You know, I was just thrilled to be there. And to have someone like that put you in every day, right in the middle of the order from day one, you talk about confidence and having someone like that believe in you and basically say, hey, you're here, I don't care how old you are, you're going to play every day and you're going to be a big part of this team. You know, from there, our relationship, I think, was always pretty special. Even after, you know, he was obviously long gone from managing, he would always text me or call me when we were on the West Coast. Sometimes he'd come by the hotel, we would grab breakfast. If he couldn't come by the hotel, he'd always make it a point to come over to Dodger Stadium and at least circle through the clubhouse for 5 or 10 minutes. And that's where you kind of saw that other side. Once he was done being the manager, done, you know, having a job with the team, I guess, he'd come in and crack jokes and ask me how I'm still fooling them and how I still have a job. You know, I watch you on TV, you're not that good, blah, blah, blah. That was him. And you're right. A lot of people don't get to see that side of him, but he took care of his players. And like I said, I'll always be grateful.
Longtime National Ryan Zimmerman and his remembrances of Frank Robinson, who obviously managed him at the very start of his Nationals career. Frank Robinson, one of the great superheroes of the game, 586 home runs at the time of his retirement, Triple Crown guy as well. Tom Boswell joined Grant and Danny this week with his reflections on Robinson.
And I just want all the black players, wherever they are.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
To know that I appreciate what they did for me to make it possible for me to play in the major leagues.
The great Frank Robinson, while being inducted into the Hall of Fame, his speech in 1982, one of the great players in the history of Major League Baseball, an MVP in both leagues, a World Series MVP, a Triple Crown Award winner, and the first African-American manager in Major League Baseball history. Tom Boswell knew Frank Robinson well, covered him in multiple markets, and he joins us now to discuss the life and the legacy of Frank Robinson, who left us too soon at 83 years old yesterday. Tom, thanks for a couple of minutes. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Why don't we start with just, and when you found out that he had passed, what are some of the first emotions that ran through you?
Actually, I found out that he was supposed to pass away maybe 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, and I got a call from an editor and said, we need an appreciation. Frank is really near the end. And I said to the editor, I think death's going to have a tough time with Frank. This might take a while. And I wrote a lead saying that death might have a hard time when Frank decided to dig in. And so since then, there were reports that Frank had not only not passed away, but had given an interview. And so when he did pass away yesterday, I'd had quite a bit of time to think about it and digest it. But it did seem just right to me that he hung in. He crowded the plate on death for 10 extra days.
What will you remember most about him, Tom? Just whether as a player, as a manager, just the character. Again, I think your piece is wonderful, encapsulating the man. I mean, I know it's hard in one story, one column to do so. But what will the legacy be for you?
I think that you played the perfect clip before this segment, and when he said, I couldn't have put up with what he put up with, speaking of Jackie Robinson. I grew up, Bill Russell, the Boston Celtics basketball player, was my favorite athlete then. I think he probably still is now. And Frank Robinson was one of Bill Russell's high school basketball teammates. That must have been some high school team. And I always thought that it was, it really resonated that Bill Russell was the first African-American professional coach in any sport, and that 8 years later, Frank became the first African-American coach in baseball. And that they could be so intent on pushing for social progress, and yet they both did it. They were absolutely honest. They were absolutely self-confident and dignified, but they also were their entire selves. Jackie Robinson constantly had to turn the other cheek. Everyone said it damaged his health to have to be yelled at and insulted and put up with everything he put up with. And both Bill Robinson and Bill Russell and Frank Robinson, they could be themselves, their whole selves, or very close to it. And I thought that Frank was that next step in the civil rights movement through sports. And I thought that was an enormously important legacy. He never forgot it. It's a good reminder today of the social what social progress looked like back then, and a reminder of why it's worth battling to keep and extend now. And Frank always had that really severe comportment, a hard eye for enemies, and a basic sense of right and wrong that you expect in a pioneer. And I wrote this morning that when he walked into a room, everyone else stood up straighter and held their heads higher. But now it's time for us all to bow our heads in respect for him for a moment.
Tom Boswell of the Washington Post, revered writer, not just on baseball, but all over the gamut, here in town on Grant and Danny. You know, the headline for your story was the proudest, orneriest, most competitive man in baseball. He really was simultaneously kind of warm-hearted and also a guy that would go after you if you asked him a question he didn't like at the same time. How did he walk that balance? He's a complicated guy.
He challenged everyone. He said that he wanted to find out if others could be intimidated. If it could be intimidated, then he would intimidate you. He was crusty. I think it was lucky for me that I had been on the baseball beat probably for 6 or 8 years before I ran into him, so I wasn't a rookie. I still remember one of the first good talks we had. I wrote a column that said the first three hitters in the Baltimore Orioles lineup ought to all be benched for different reasons. And I said that I was particularly hard on Fred Lynn, who had been the most valuable player several years before. I said, firemen go into burning buildings for $10,000 a year. For $1 million a year, Fred Lynn won't pinch hit with the bases loaded in Yankee Stadium if he has a cold. Well, Freddie got all mad, wouldn't talk to the press, but he also got hot and was American League Player of the Week. So I came back over, and I'm standing by the batting cage, and Frank, who's a coach then under Earl Weaver, kind of sidles up over to me, and we haven't talked much in the past, and he just said, psst, psst, and I turn around, and he said, could you rip Freddie again next week? He was always... He was always the most candid about players that he had liked and admired, or those he had no use for. He just despised the PED players who, whenever somebody would pass one of would pass Ernie Banks on the home run list, or would approach him, or God forbid, passed Hank Aaron, he was just scathing. I mean, he was one of those who helped me and others understand. Look, this is cheating. Really, really cheating and breaking our records doing this is wrong, and he just had no use for him. And there was another story. Somebody once asked him what he thought about Gary Carter's induction into the Hall of Fame. Gary Carter was a very good catcher, and he said, "Gary Carter." Oh, he said, "What do you think about Carter being a Hall of Famer?" And he said, "There's a difference between a Hall of Famer and being in the Hall of Fame. Gary Carter is in the Hall of Fame." Mm-hmm. So, when you're tough on Hall of Famers, you know he'll be tough on rest. I remember one time I had gotten on his managing. He was very old school, and you know, he was just way behind anything in analytics or stuff like that. He compensated it for with amazing leadership skills. But one, I covered him when he was manager of the Orioles, and later when he was manager with the Nats. I think it was probably when he was managing the Orioles. I wrote a piece just criticizing his managing. And the next day, when you rip him, you always come to the ballpark the next day. And I'm by the cage again. And Frank comes by me and he makes this big sweeping gesture with his right hand and like he's stabbing himself in the back with a knife. And he didn't stop. There's no joke. He just glared at me, just kept right on going.
Oh, wow.
That's intimidating.
He's like, I saw it. You just need to know that I saw it.
FYI, I read it.
Yep. I read it. I'll remember it. You backstabber, you. So anyway.
Tom, the contrast to me, though, this is the thing I'll remember most about. I'm too young to remember him playing, unfortunately. But my dad would speak about him so glowingly, especially his time in Baltimore. But as a manager, as tough and demanding and competitive and looking to fight Mike Socha, a guy half his age, and, you know, and a brick house, I will never, ever forget the Matt LaCroix incident and the tears that he shed. As you mentioned, again, you captured it so perfectly in his piece, but the dichotomy, the contrast that broke him, that seemed to like break his heart having to do that. Can you go into that?
Yes, LaCroix was a journeyman ball player, but a good one. He'd had a long career, had to battle for everything, and they played him at catcher against a team that ran constantly. I think LaCroix was sort of out of position and maybe had some arm problems. Anyway, they stole 7 bases on him in one game, and there may have been a couple of pass balls in there too. And before the game was over, Frank replaced him in the middle of an inning. That you would almost never see that happen. If Frank Robinson had been pulled out of right field in the middle of an inning, I don't know what would have happened in the dugout. And Frank, after the game, someone asked him about taking LaCroix out in the middle of the inning. And Frank started to talk about how horrible it made him feel and that he didn't want that to happen to anyone. And he started to cry, talking about how bad he felt for LaCroix, for a real pro to be humiliated like that. And we asked LaCroix about it, and he said, "Oh, don't worry, my dad would have done the same thing."
Yeah.
So, but Frank was very, on one of the teams he managed, there was a guy who was so just sort of an emotional mess, tough life, that his nickname among teammates was Tripolar. And Frank sought him out and became his best friend, confidant, and just helped him enormously. And where others in baseball can really be harsh and treat serious things like that as something funny, Frank treated it as something real and made a real effort to help that guy and did.
Tom, I think if he walked by you behind the cage today, he'd pat you on the back, not make that gesture. It was a heck of a piece, and I'm sure he would have enjoyed it. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for the stories.
Good deal. You got it.
Tom Boswell with Grant and Dana yesterday as Frank Robinson passes away at the age of 83. Some news notes around the league. Kyle Barraclough lost his arbitration case. He'll make $1.725 instead of $2 million. Nats wound up winning both of their arbitration cases this year. Michael A. Taylor losing his as well. Around the league, we told you earlier, Tim Collins, the former Nat, now as he inks a minor league contract deal with the Minnesota Twins, so he'll go to the spring training with them on a minor league deal. Brad Boxberger this week, 32 saves a year ago, the right-handed reliever, going to end up in Kansas City on a one-year deal. Matt Davidson to add some depth in Texas on a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training. Devin Mesoraco, catching depth for the Mets, coming back again with a minor league contract with an invitation to spring training. Same thing for Hunter Pence, the veteran outfielder, going to try and catch on with Texas in the same capacity this year. Ryan Flaherty, minor league contract invitation with the Cleveland Indians. George Contos, the same thing with the Chicago Cubs, trying to add some depth there, the former New York Yankee. Curtis Granderson in Miami with a minor league contract invitation there. And Jason Hamill, veteran pitcher, to try and catch on with Texas via a minor league contract as well. So those are the kind of things we're seeing, because not a lot of the big guys have signed yet. Pitching wise, you know, still Craig Kimbrell out there, still Dallas Keuchel out there, and obviously we still wait as the clock ticks on Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. That'll do it for our show this week. Next week when we join you, we've got spring training underway. Hard to believe, the baseball season finally is here. Who will be where is the question. All those answers hopefully forthcoming next week. Our thanks to Jim Jester for his help as always. I'm Pete Medhurst. We hope you enjoy the remembrances of Frank Robinson today. on the Nats Hot Stove Show, right here on the Nats Radio Network.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.